What's going on? Welcome back to Stacking Slabs. This is your hobby content alternative, and this is Hobby Shop Talk. Yes, once a month, we come at you with Jameson Long, owner at Port City Sports Collectibles, to give you a bird's eye view on what's going on at the hobby shop level. This was probably my favorite conversation with Jameson yet. I felt like there was so much to talk about. Jameson just got back from the Topps Industry Conference, so we got a chance to talk a little bit about Fanatics, Topps, what was being shared, the communication, and how does that filter back to us, the collector. So really good conversation. I promise you, you're going to hear stuff about that conference that you will not have heard anywhere else. Make sure you go check out Jameson's shop, Port City Sports Collectibles, across all the social channels. He is always bringing great energy and great content and great products to us. Without further ado, let's kick it to the conversation. All right, we're back here. We're doing Hobby Shop Talk. We've been doing this about once a month with Jameson at Port City Sports Collectibles. He just came back from the Topps Conference, so I definitely want to spend time digging into just that experience, although not directly in his shop. I'm sure there's a lot of fallout and stories that we all saw on our Instagram that we can chat about. But Jameson, welcome back, man. What's new? How are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me back. Yeah, we're kind of coming off the heels of the Topps Industry Conference, where I'm sure, a lot of stuff we'll be discussing is not late breaking news, but maybe we can dive a little bit deeper into some of the aspects of it. And definitely, energized, kind of seeing the vision that Fanatics has planned for Topps, and kind of some of the synergies between Fanatics, Topps, the dealer body network, and how that ultimately translates down to the consumer aspect. So exciting stuff. There's some good direction Fanatics has for the future. Obviously, like anything, not everybody may agree, or if you're a little set in your ways and you've done stuff for one way for a long time, I think they're going to disrupt that a little bit, which can be good or bad, depending on what side of the spectrum you fall on with that. But I think ultimately it's all in an initiative to push the industry and the hobby forward. And one thing they were pounding on is they want to make the funnel at the top a lot bigger. You know what I mean? They want to be more sports car presence, more places than ever before. And I think that's what we're going to see, a huge initiative from them over the next few years.
So we're going to spend a ton of time doing this, and it's almost hard for me just to like zip past everything you just said and get into it, but maybe we can touch on one thing, which is I think a topic, and then we'll go back to the conference that just triggered in my mind as you were talking through that. It is just one of the moves we all make in the hobby and on Instagram is like when we see something and when something releases, drop, new product, news, information, whatever, it's an immediate reaction and it's immediate judgment on what those things are. And this isn't exclusive to the hobby and sports cards. It's literally everything with the proliferation of social media and giving access to everyone who can share their opinion publicly. So as a individual who was, working while the conference was going on, we were chopping it up. I was like dropping in people's lives, just seeing what was happening. That was fun. And then there was also like responses, some positive, some negative. That balance of like the reaction of people who aren't necessarily there, like, I think it's good to have criticism, and it's also good to be super excited. What do you think, like, is there a right balance, especially when something new drops? Like, we're going to talk about it, but the easy thing to talk about right now is just like Topps Chrome Basketball. Like, we'll get into it in more detail later, but sure. Like, what's the balance from your perspective?
Well, I mean, I think one thing that's easy, I think, sometimes for me to kind of just like, when people are posting, that I just kind of like push to the side, like, if 99% of your posts are all negative all the time, like, why are you even here kind of situation? Like, do you actually enjoy the hobby, or do you just enjoy complaining about the hobby? And then if you're overly positive all the time, that's also detrimental, I think, on the other side. I think, you know, I like to look at people that have a fair balance that like, hey, listen, or maybe in the middle, like, let's just wait and see how things bake out. You know, literally, you know, the funniest thing is we live in the soundbite era, these short snippets. It's like one picture of a Wimby card and not everybody has already staked that this is either the greatest or the worst product that's ever invented, no matter what. You know what I mean? And if you like this product and you've ever said anything bad about a Leaf product, you're a hypocrite. If you hate this product, you're a hater. You know, it's just like, guys, just let it breathe for a minute. Nobody's even seen anything except this one card of Victor Wembanyama, you know, which I happen to think they did a real tasteful job on. I think the card looks amazing. You know what I mean? You know, if you're going to tell me like, because it doesn't say spur, because it only says San Antonio, and if they added one five-letter word, that takes the card from amazing to terrible. But then, I mean, I guess that's your opinion, but I don't really care about it. You know what I mean? Like, if it was a terrible design and you don't like design, that's cool. But like, you know, we just get so nitpicky sometimes with some of the stuff. You know, it's no different than the guys like, oh, cards are too expensive. They're not accessible. Da 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 da. So then they print more to make it, oh, they're printing too much cards. I can't da da da. Everything's worth, like, everybody wants to buy a box for $100 and be able to pull a $1 million card out of it. And then it's just, it's impossible, guys. Like, and so sometimes I almost just laugh as I'm scrolling through the post because people are going to buy it anyway and they're still going to complain about it and da 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 da. And it's just, it's this social media, hear me now mentality. My opinion is the only one that's valid, and anybody else that thinks anything's different is stupid. It's very similar, you know, I'm not to bring politics into it, but it's very similar to the political climate, and it's kind of just bleeds out into everything else in our life these days. So,
yes, it certainly does. And I want to move into Port City Sports Collectibles, but before I do that, you said something else. If I don't like bring it up now, I might forget to, and I sure. think it's really important. But you said Topps and Fanatics, they want to widen the funnel, right? Get sports cards placement in more areas. And I think it'll be interesting, without knowing any details, like what that means and how that plays out. And I think like exposure for the industry and cards is a really good thing. And getting cards in front of people who haven't thought about cards in a while, it will help, you know, get more people involved. I think my question, I don't know if you gathered any of this information, is like, how do we do that? But how do we do it in a way that stuff's just not going to implode, like when we were in the pandemic bubble where new people were entering and then they would lose their money and then they would leave? Was there any context or conversation around just like, it's great to expand it, but then how are we going to get people to stay?
Yeah, I think that kind of falls back a lot to and kind of what they're pushing. And I know it's kind of sometimes hard for like people to see it in the moment. And maybe I can relate to it a little bit more because my background in the automotive industry had a lot to deal with on the manufacturer side of things. Is I think a lot of it is going to be the follow up that happens when they come into a store like ours. Like if it just becomes strictly financial and it's all about flipping, turning. Well, when that's all the enjoyment is, when you do get a dip, then it's easy for those people to bail out. But if you're creating stickiness at the point of sale, in the shop, trade nights, events, community, and you're having that tie in and people are enjoying themselves when they're coming into your shop, and the whole environment experience, they feel a part of. People want to be a part of something, right? And so if they feel like they're part of a family or a network or their friends are at the card shop, da 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 da, all these relationships, that's, I think, the stickiness of really the sports card. Sports cards really in its best form is a vehicle to bring people together. Is the way it's a commonality, just like, you know, maybe me and you nerd out about wrestling sometimes. Like that's a vehicle for us to bond and have a relationship over. And sports cards is similar. There is enjoyment in the physical asset of a card itself. Like, yes, I like this card. It brings me enjoyment. But even that over time with certain cards, just like me and you've talked about, it wanes. Like the card I had to have one day, next year I'm looking at them like, I don't love this card anymore. But the friend you made, maybe making a deal to have that card, you still talk to that friend this day, and that relationship has sustained. So I think sometimes and I think Fanatics kind of pointed to this a little bit. And I think this is, you know, kind of the whole ecosystem trying to build is it has to be less transactional, even though we are transacting, and more relational. And the relational stuff, it can happen with breakers online. There is that aspect, but I still think in a world that's gone digital, we still crave as human beings to have that personal in-person relationship. And that's, I think, why the hobby shop will always remain the kind of the heartbeat of the hobby, because it's truly a unique experience that you can only find within the card shop.
I love it. We could definitely just do the whole episode on the fallout of the Topps conference, and we're going to get back to it. Before we do that, I want to learn a little bit more. You said you're energized, which is fun. I think that's always a good feeling after going to a big event like that. I'm curious, just at the store level, kind of going into the summer months, what are you focused on? Like, what are your big priorities, and how are those things that you're working on, how are they going to impact kind of the regular customers that come through your doors at Port City Sports Collectibles?
Yeah. So, you know, for us, summer is especially important because we are in a beach town. So the amount of tourism picks up tremendously as we get, you know, when kids are out of school and stuff. You know, Wilmington is a beach destination town for a lot of people. So there's a couple of things we're really focused on is, one, just getting inventory up, making sure that we have what we need to meet the demand in the store. We're working on, you know, yesterday we released our own kind of in-store repack, kind of a little bit higher end football product. You know, it'll retail around $225 a box, but really designed to bring, you know, we've had some repack products and we've done well with them, but, you know, I just saw an opportunity, like, let's cut the middleman out. We have great singles. We have stuff that we can provide the customer. No point of paying them a margin. Let's get better value into the hand of the consumer. So we rolled that out. We'll be rolling that out over the next few days with basketball and baseball as well. So we're really excited about that. We'll be staffing up. We got additional help that's going to start in the summer. Again, just to meet the demands. We're looking to open up some more kind of channels of sale. You know, right now we've been doing breaking, but we definitely want to get back, I think, to some more like single sales on whatnot, doing stuff like that, just ramping up our eBay business. You know, more attention to the website, which we just got to the point where it's getting too much for me and just a light bit of help. So we're definitely staffing up, got some full-time people coming on, and really just, you know, the same value proposition we've always given to the consumer. We want them to enjoy their experience here. We always want to have fresh new singles. We never want it to be stale. We don't want them to come in and say like, oh man, this is the exact same stuff we came in here last time when we were here. They don't ever change. So we're always buying. We're always moving old inventory, bringing in new inventory, because we really want to create that experience of, man, if we don't get in there soon, we're going to miss out on the new stuff that's coming in. And so we just really want to always make it so the consumer always needs the touch point and to come in and see us, because that's exciting. You know, we don't want to be stale. We want to keep innovating and growing and looking at opportunities to expand the business.
When you look at like inventory in your showcases, what is the point where you know, one, you need to do something about it, whether it's move old inventory out, move new inventory in, and then how do you go about like replenishing it? Are you just like a collector would be, going to, you know, eBay, going to Instagram, trying to work deals? Like, what's that process look like for you?
It's more, you know, I won't say there's like an exact formula I have, like, oh, we're down to X inventory, like we got it. It's more like a feel. Like when I'm looking at the showcase, I'm like, all right, it's like, but I mean, always our first line that we want to buy from is our customers. You know, I think it's very important that you're not only a consumer, but a participant in the hobby. Like we can't always just suck money out of the ecosystem. We have to put it back in. So when we're able to buy cars from our local customers that come in and kind of help them, like a you know, if they've opened some boxes and maybe they're looking for only one or two guys and they have these cards that they don't really care about, we'd much rather buy from them than have to go on eBay or some other digital platform. Not that we won't, because we will, but we love our first and foremost, we always want to buy from our customers. And, we've been fortunate that I think they see that we handle them fair. They know we have to make a little bit of money, but we're also not trying to pay them 40 and 50% comps. You know, they understand there's fees that are associated with things like eBay and stuff like that. And, you know, they get paid out right there. They don't have to wait. And I think, you know, I think we're more than fair. And I think they realize that, and especially if it's someone that supports us. You know, if they really support us, we want to support them back. Because I think going back to it, it is an ecosystem. Like, you can't just kind of always suck money out of it. You gotta filter it back through in order for it to stay healthy. And so I think that's important. I think sometimes, you know, some card shops forget about that. They got to win every deal by a mighty amount. And, you know, that's a quick way to drive customers away. Like, if you're selling them $500 box and then, you know, they come back in to kind of sell what they got and you're, you know, paying them 40, 50% of what they just pulled, like, how is that a good deal for them? You know, why would they want to continue to do that? So I think that's super important. And then shows, we love buying at shows. That's a great opportunity to get singles, to buy in bulk. Especially if it's somewhat local, again, you're putting money back into the local community. So that's always good. But we will buy off eBay, Facebook, Instagram, you know, your normal platforms, stuff like that, MySlabs. So yeah, we'll support those platforms as well.
I want to talk to you about shows, because I saw on Instagram you post you setting up at the Wilmington card shows. When you go in and set up at a show, you mentioned, you know, buying singles, which is probably one of the goals. Probably selling inventory is a goal. Probably branding is a goal. But like, how do you think about like your participation at the show level and what you're looking to accomplish?
It probably depends more like where I'm at. So at a local show, you know, definitely we want to have that presence. We want to support the local promoters, collectors. You know, we love to give giveaways and stuff like that, just to kind of help boost morale, attendance, whatever. But I mean, for me, I do like to move inventory at the show, but I do honestly, to me, it's more successful to buy well than to sell well at the shows, because it is a good opportunity for inventory. And sometimes you do get people that may be traveling a little bit further than they would just to visit the shop to come to a show. And so it is sometimes your chance. Some of these people, we only see them at the show, but they're our customer. They look for us at the show. They follow us on social. They see us at the show and they come see us at the show. And so that's a great opportunity to have that touch point to stay connected to them and to, do some business with them. So there is some people that we consider customers that don't necessarily come into the shop, but we do transact with them at these regional and somewhat local shows. And so that's always a good touch point for us.
I would love to dig into this, like you saying it's a good opportunity to buy. I think you go to shows and you know, casual hobby participant walks around and, you know, the mentality is like, we're going up to these showcases to buy cards, right? But then you see the sign in the corner that says like, always buying, like,
right,
you know, and like the dealers are there obviously to buy cards too. I've always wondered this, and maybe you can help me and it's probably different for everyone, but you saying that buying is maybe more important, that hit me. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Maybe like help us all understand that, especially because it's like show season and people are going to be, you know, going to regional shows and bigger shows and trying to understand like what's going on the other side of the table. So like, talk a little bit about your philosophy and mentality when it comes to not only the selling of the cars, but also buying at shows.
Well, I mean, I just think, you know, it's kind of intentionality, right? When people come to a show, they're coming for reasons. You know, most people aren't coming in with their Zion case just to walk around with it. You know, they're coming there to do business, you know. Many are coming to sell, some are coming to buy. But I think you have people that are there to do business. So you know the intent. You know, there's, you know, they may have driven 3-4 hours to be at the show. So a lot of them don't want to just come in and do nothing. They're looking to do something. And then there's always that opportunity where, like, you know, I'm a consumer. there's a guy that has a card I really want, but maybe he's not open to trading or doesn't want any to buy my stuff. But now I have this whole table full of people that there may be an opportunity for me to move it in a different way. And you know, full transparency, you know, that urgency can sometimes work in a buyer's favor. You know, if I'm buying and they got something and that other dealer has something that they really want and they're not willing to work with them, but we are willing to buy it, you know, and it's kind of like, okay, I got to do something here because I really want that card and I got these cards. I really don't want them. I would rather have that card. So again, we're going to offer what we're going to offer. We're not going to, like, you know, we're not going to go, oh, I know you need that card, so now I'm going to offer you 30%. You know, we're going to offer what we're going to offer, but it does help create urgency for that customer to do something. Because, okay, I'm here. I can see that card. See, want, have to have, you know, it's like caveman mentality. See, want, have to have. So, you know, all that's flooding through their mind is I got to get this card. And so, and maybe they see a card they didn't anticipate seeing. Maybe it's a more expensive card than they anticipated seeing. And maybe they do have stuff, and maybe it also opens them to maybe like, I didn't really want to move this, but now I really want to get that. So even the stuff that I originally maybe was off the table, now I'm open to selling it because I got to have that. And so it just opens up a lot more opportunities, I think. And then it's also the opportunity of, man, this guy's ready to buy. He's going to pay me cash. I don't have to ship it. I don't have to pay eBay anything. I don't have to pay Goldin anything. I don't have to pay PWCC anything. Even though I use all those places, I'm not saying they're bad, that you shouldn't pay them percentages. I'm just saying it's that instant gratification. Sell card now, cash in hand, no shipping issues, no eBay authentication issues, no nothing. I can do a deal, sign, seal, delivered. I'm set. I got my cash. I'm free to go on my way.
I love it. I feel like maybe in a future episode, we can go deeper on that because there's a lot that I'm curious about. But we'll move on to the next, and maybe this will be – I feel like this topic can help us lead back into the TOPS conference topic, but I want to talk a little bit about just like allocation and relationship you have as an owner with the manufacturers. Maybe like give us a peek behind the curtain on like how that all works. Like, what are you doing to kind of build and develop the relationship, and just anything you can share about just like how products come from, you know, manufacturer to distributor to, you know, the front door of Port City Sports Collectibles? Like, what's the method to the madness?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I'm kind of a newer shop, so I can't like really speak for how it was 5 years ago per se. But I do know, you know, it is a partnership, you know, so I think, you know, you got to be willing to take the less desirable products with the good, you know, you can't just say, hey, I want 100 cases of Bowman, but I don't want any TOPS Big League, not to say it's a bad product. I don't want any, random off sport, you know, NBA G League, you know, whatever, you know, you got to understand it's a partnership. You can't just say, I want to cherry pick the creme de la creme and, you know, and I'll pass on all the bad products. So you got to have that kind of have that give and take. So I think one is, you know, so what we've really not passed on any product. You know, we're taking everything, at least on the initial allocation. Now, if we take an initial allocation, you know, because usually there's like a first offering, second, sometimes even a third offering, you know, if they have product left over, you know, if we're still struggling to move it, we may not go in on the rebuy on some stuff. A lot of stuff we do because we move it pretty well, but not everything. So we're always at least taking that initial offering to show our commitment and our willingness to help. And then, you know, from there, you know, a lot of times we're going back on that initial allocation and we don't always get it, but you know, my rep, he knows I usually, hey, that's all I got, X amount. Can you slide me another case or two of X product, you know? And it's not always just on like the primo. We're taking a lot of that because we do great with boxes in the $100 to $200 range, you know, even more so than some of like the high end stuff, you know, just because it's in more people's wheelhouse. It's that back and forth. Sometimes we get it, sometimes we don't, you know, but I've seen like one is with our relationship is we're not jerks about it. You know, we ask about it. We understand sometimes we get it, sometimes we don't. We try to create a case for why we do need it. But we try to be kind of give and take on both sides. So we usually get an initial allocation. Sometimes on that initial allocation, we'll go back and say, hey, would love a little bit more of this product. Could you give me another case or two of it? I would say more times than not, they're able to work with us. There is some off, and then there's sometimes we don't get any product of a specific product, especially if it's like low print run, we're a newer shop. But, you know, if we say, hey, we'd really love to have a case of this, if you get it, you know, they've been willing to work with us and give us some cases where we weren't originally allocated any, probably because we're a newer shop and stuff. But I think our spin's been pretty good. You know, it used to just be kind of, you know, my understanding is you spend a lot, you get a lot. But one thing that was that was blatantly clear moving forward with Tops and Fanatics is not you spend a lot, you get a lot. You spend a lot, that's great, but you also got to do all this. And that goes back to, does your store look like a place somebody would want to come in and retail transact, or does it look like a glorified flea market? You know, they were, you know, does your, are you participating in Tops MVP buyback? Are you participating in rip nights? Are you, so it, they're looking and for a more holistic partnership, not while you've been in business for 30 years, you sell a lot of product, because I think it tops is tops mind, which, you know, makes sense. I know people don't like to hear this, but like, they already have the card collector. They don't need the card collector. They're coming in. They're on Fanatics Live. They're on Whatnot. They're on all these apps buying into breaks. They're on tops.com. What they're more into, they know they got you already. They're not worried about you. You're not, or they are, but they're not, if that makes sense. They know you're a habitual buyer. They're working on, okay, if we go out and we market on Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, if we're cross-branding and bringing athletes, major athletes on commercials, and that's that customer's first time ever stepping into a hobby shop, what is the impression? How does that mom feel when they walk into a card shop? How does that wife feel when they're coming in with their husband? How does that girlfriend feel? You know, what is on the TV? What is the cleanliness of the shop? So they're not, you know, they are worried about the current consumer. They want to make good products that people want to buy. Don't get me wrong. But they are also heavily focused, I think, of, is this person's first time ever coming into a hobby shop? Because if you think, how many sports fans are there? Millions, billions around the world. We don't have billions of people collecting sports cards, right? So there's this huge funnel. And what they want to focus on is, if we are able to drive them into your store, what is their first impression? You only get one chance for a first impression. And if it's a bad first impression, not to say you can't overcome it, but it's hard. So they're focused on, what is the impression? What is the experience? What are they seeing when they're coming into these shops? It's not just, yeah, I sell a lot of product, give me a lot of product. And so they actually even unveiled a scorecard that's going to come out to dealers that's basically rated on 1 to 3. All those kind of aspects are tied into it. And that's going to be tied into your allocation moving forward.
So there's so much there that you just mentioned. I think a couple comments for me. So you're saying that the old dingy card shop and the card shop owner who doesn't want to change with the times, the less adaptable owner, I'd say, maybe like the time might be ticking a little bit. It's like if they don't make the changes, then they're not going to get cards, and it's going to be really hard to survive if you're not getting cards from, you know, your distributor. Is that a real life situation that can go down if owners aren't adapting?
I definitely think so. And I don't think this, not that they don't think the card, like the current body of card dealers is important, and they don't value them and they don't see value in it. But at the same time, I think they have a lot of people waiting in the wings that would love to be Topps direct accounts, you know, that would be willing to play ball with them. So, you know, and like I said, my previous background is in the automotive industry, little OEM side. And, you know, I've seen this for years. You know, if you want to buy another, if you're a Toyota dealer and you want another Toyota dealership, you know, they might say, hey, you got to get a new facility before we're going to allow you to get another Toyota dealership. You're still working out of the same building you worked out of in 1970, you know? So this is nothing new when you bring corporate America into the fold, you know, if you're trying to progress the business. And some people don't want to progress the business. Some people are perfectly fine with what we have today. They've been doing well for many years. But a company like Fanatics is not going to make the investment that they've made in licensing, in technology, in marketing and all this stuff and just sit on the sideline and say, all right, boys, go get it. You know, they're not. I mean, Michael Rubin didn't get to be Michael Rubin from being a passive guy. You know, there's definitely, they have intentionality, they have plans. And I think, you know, that may force some guys, you know, over the next few years to either get out, sell or whatever, because they don't want to play that type of ball. So we'll see. But it's definitely, you know, I think their click word of the conference or was accountability. And as they mentioned, it's on both sides. You know, they said, this is what we're accountable to you guys with, that in return, this is what we're expecting. And so I think it's definitely going to be a new era when it comes to the hobby shop and the demands on it and what's the expectation moving forward.
Last thing before we get back to the conference, you mentioned your buying strategy is you want to build the relationship, right? And so you're taking on everything, which with that, right, you're able to provide options to the people coming in your store. Some of those products, I'm sure, are selling better than the others. How do you think about the process of kind of disseminating all of those boxes and cases that come to your door? Like, there's obviously a lot of different channels, your own one being your own store, but how do you think about kind of selling out all of the boxes and then moving on, so you've got like some sort of organization on what's coming in and what's going out?
I mean, we just try to have a good product array. So like, even if, like, for example, Star Wars, we're not heavy Star Wars sellers here, you know, non-sport. We want to have at least a few, because we do get people every once in a while that walk in and, hey, do you got any Star Wars in? And we don't want to turn them all. We don't want to say, no, we don't have anything. We might not have the products they want, but at least they know that we have those products here. So we just kind of, you know, ebb and flow. We know, you know, hopefully our customer base keeps getting wider. So we have more customers coming. So we don't mind sitting on product for a while, because all it takes is the right person coming in wanting that or desiring that product. And so, for example, like for us last year, basketball was an extremely slow seller. It was by far the third most popular, which for me, I'm a basketball guy. Typically, that's mainly my PC is made up of. But like this year, Wimby has rejuvenated it, you know, and then, you know, we had some 22, 23 stuff. We didn't just like go liquidate it, but you're starting to see guys like Paolo, Chet, Jalen Williams, you know, picking up some hobby steam now, all three guys in the playoffs doing well. So we've been selling some of that stuff lately that we may not have had if we just were quick to liquidate it at the end of the year last year or something like that, knowing Wimby. So I think it's just balancing, you know, obviously as a card shop owner, you always want to stay in a good cash flow position, because you want to also be able to capitalize on opportunities when they come in. You don't just want to have so much inventory that you're cardboard rich and cash poor. You know, it's just finding that balance. We've been fortunate that we haven't really had an issue when it comes to that. And we do always maintain, if someone walks in with a great collection, we want to be able to offer them and be able to pay them right then on the spot for the collection if we need to. So I think more so than anything, it's just managing your cash flow. Not necessarily the products. I mean, most of the products sell well. There's usually a niche for almost everything. And just with the breadth of customer that come into the store, you know, like some of the most popular stuff that we sell is stuff that I would never buy personally, but I can't buy it for myself. I got to buy it for what sells. You know, and so it's always, that was the kind of the big dynamic shift for me as a collector, a longtime collector. It's like I had to get the mindset off of, don't worry about what you would want and buy. Like, pay attention to the trends of your customers. What do they want to buy? You know, and, you know, some, like I said, some stuff I would never think about buying personally is some of our most popular stuff. So I just got to always remember, what is the consumer saying they want, and to try to feed that demand.
I just want to be a fly on the wall in some of those conversations with legacy hobby shop owner and distributor when they've passed every year on WNBA cards. And this year they're like dying for cases. That's what I want to be here for.
Well, that's the thing, man. I mean, you just never know. I mean, and sometimes you got to weigh it out, you know, is, is five bad years worth of product worth one good year? Or are you better off just maybe buckling up and paying on the secondary market for some of that product? You know, it's, everyone's different. You know, it's kind of, you know, it's like hockey this year with Bedard, you know. Everybody wants Bedard now, you know, but is it going to be that way next year? You know, so it's just some stuff, you know, you got to realize, okay, is this a core? I think one thing we look at is our core product offerings, baseball, basketball, and football. That's our core. That's the core of our customer. That's the heart of it. Do we want to weigh ourselves down with some of the, you know, do we want to have that direct relationship on some of the other stuff that maybe there's some good products mixed in, but there's a lot of bad that comes with it? Is it worth carrying that? Or would we rather just pay a little bit of inflated price on the secondary market for the good product when it comes out and have that product available for the consumer? Even if our margins are tighter, sometimes we feel like that it's a better use of our capital not to be heavy in all the other not as desirable products. And we'll just pay a little bit more and roll with a little bit tighter margins on some of the better products when they do come out.
I love it. Let's close it out by going back to what we started talking about, and that's the TOPS Industry Conference. We'll just do this. Like, take us in on kind of your experience. Give us kind of a bird's eye view to like the program, like what you learned, anything that you want to share.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, first day, kind of just check in, reception party, kind of just everyone's just getting acclimated, saying hello to each other. Super nice venue. I was at the College Football Hall of Fame in downtown Atlanta. Atlanta's kind of turned into a rough area, but the venue itself was really nice, good spread, really cool. I got to meet Thurman Thomas, you know, that was cool, picture taken, all that stuff. So great little first night, roll into the kind of the first official full day. A lot of that was kind of, I'd say 30,000 foot level stuff. Here's our vision. They kind of rolled out the hobby shop. They're calling it the hobby shop 2.0. This is what we're going to be looking at. Da 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 da. You know, had a nice little kind of little section. They had like PWCC come up and do a little talk about kind of the platform, which is going to be, I think, moving to Fanatics Marketplace. So that's going to get a whole new branding under the Fanatics umbrella. Got the guy on that kind of runs Fanatics Live came up, kind of talked about kind of what they see from that aspect moving forward. Then you had kind of a round table, they call it fireside chat. And you had Michael Rubin, Michael Mahan, one other gentleman up there, again, kind of talking about kind of what they see moving forward. They talked a lot about Fanatics Fest, which is kind of their, I think, version of the national, or kind of comic, you know, their vision. They basically said it. How do we take the New York Comic Con and how do we bring that into the card market? So it's not just, you know, 100% card show. It's card show with experience, you know, and they're going to have Tom Brady there, Derek Jeter, the Williams sisters, the NBA will be there, Nike, the MLB, you know, it's really more of like a cultural experience. And again, focused on that top of the funnel, you know, somebody may come, WWE is going to be there, you know, maybe someone's coming to see the NBA event or the MLB event or the WWE event, but then how do we filter them over here to the sports card section and say, hey, wow, this is cool. You know, again, broad, you know, people that go into the national, they're already going to do sports cards. How do we get those other people over? And then they're actually going to have more regional events like that. I think there's another one that's going to be in Orlando that I think they're targeting, maybe having like 1,000 tables. That's really going to be more smaller scale cultural events, still some of that with athletes and stuff there, but much more heavily card focused as well. So you'll have that aspect there. They talked about that aspect. And then the afternoon was breakout. So you got to pick specific topics you wanted to learn about. And they had kind of people that work within Fanatics that was kind of their designation to kind of talk about that. Some of those had some dealer interaction where they had dealers that they thought were doing things really well, to kind of also provide a voice in those kind of breakout meetings. And then that night we had kind of just a tailgate thing, which was nice. Again, Andrew Jones, former Atlanta Brave, was there taking pictures, signing autographs and stuff. And then the next day was kind of what you've all been seeing, the tweets and quotes and Instagram pictures. They really got into specifics of some of the product offerings that we can look forward to coming down the pipeline. I think that's what got everybody really excited, is just kind of seeing some of the stuff coming down the pipe from obviously the two biggest ones, I think, were basketball and football, because we know they have the license coming down the line. We know some of the athletes they've already signed, to kind of seeing what they were coming with down the line. So I will mention, it was interesting, you know, one of the dealers in the crowd actually asked them why they did what they did with Wembanyama and Stroud, and asked them if they realized that they were hurting the card market by doing that. That was at the fireside chat with Ruben and da-da-da, and saying that they were actually hurting the hobby, da-da-da-da-da. And so it was interesting kind of hearing a little bit of the back and forth there. And Ruben's basically answer was, we provide more value to them. You know, for the athletes, it's not just about cards. With Fanatics, it's an overall partnership. And he basically said, you know, we'll be honest, a lot of the athletes don't enjoy signing the cards. They don't like to do it. Their hands hurt. It takes time away, da-da-da-da. But with the Fanatics partnership, it's more than just that. It's global branding. It's merchandise. It's all this other stuff that comes with it. As he said, you see me at the courtside at the 76er game, I'm with CJ Stroud. We hang out together. You know what I mean? So, you know, I thought he had a good answer without, you know, sounding like super arrogant about it or something. He's just like, not, you know, hate to burst your bubble, but not all the guys enjoy doing this, you know? So we're trying to provide more value for them. It's more, we're pushing their branding forward, not just limiting them to signing a card and that being the extent of it.
This is super fascinating. One thing that, dude, it's the amount of consolidation in the industry over the last like 6 to 12 months. It's like you forget about stuff. It's like almost like Fanatics buying PWCC. It's like, you reminded me it happened.
Right.
But it's almost like we forget about it because we just keep moving on. I don't know, like, what's your feel for acquisition in the hobby and like the integration of existing business into a bigger business? Like, obviously, like PWCC and Fanatics, you were there like listening to them talk about it. But like, this is just the industry, you know, in software, it happens all the time that I'm used to. But like, I don't know, any perspective there just in terms of like how that will impact the end user or the person listening to the show, if at all?
I think they're just trying to, you know, when you look at the verticals they're building, I think they're trying to alleviate maybe. So the way I look at it is, you know, I'm sure at some point they're going to probably partner or buy some type of grading company or infused grading. So I think ultimately, like somewhere like a Fanatics Live or a hobby shop like ours is basically a one-stop shop for the customer. So like, say we're an official Fanatics Marketplace drop-off center. Customer comes in the shop, they pull a really big card, right? There's kind of two ways they can go with it. They can sell it to us, or potentially it's a monster card and they want to run it on auction. Well, they can buy the card here. They can either grade it. They can send it to auction straight from us, da da da. I think the same thing on Fanatics Live. You break in with a breaker. You pull a monster card. You don't really want the card. You want the money from the card. You're more, you know, wow, this is a $100,000 card. I don't need a $100,000 card. My family would do way better with the money. The card could literally go, you may never touch that card. That card could go to Fanatics Live, to PSA, straight to PWCC or Fanatics Marketplace. So I think they're trying to alleviate some of the pain points or streamline some processes for consumers that gives them direct pathways to move through the hobby. You know, I think, you know, a lot of times we talk about stickiness, right? How can I prevent the consumer from leaving my ecosystem and going somewhere else where someone else could potentially capture my consumer? And I think they're trying to, you know, from what it looks like, they're trying to create that kind of web where it's like, no, you don't ever have to leave us. We got the cards. We got the grading. We got the place you can open the cards. We got the place you can grade the cards. We got the place you can sell the card. We got the shows you can set up with the card. You know, so they're trying to build this one shop, one stop brand loyalty ecosystem. And you can talk about your pluses and minuses of that, you know, obviously. When you get into things like monopolies and stuff, we've seen, I think, some of the worries we've had about, it's like, oh no, Panini's going away, but Panini, not quite to the scale, but they've had the card monopoly for, you know, at least on basketball and football for a while now, you know, And I think they've not really pushed it forward that much as well. So, I mean, there's going to be pluses and minuses that come along with it. But, I mean, it is what it is. It's coming, you know, so we can, you know, learn to live without within it if you enjoy collecting that much. Or, you know, maybe some people say, hey, our collecting run's coming to an end. It was a good run. We don't like the way the hobby's moving. But, you know, I think they're going to – I like some of the stuff. I think they're trying to innovate. I think they're trying to come up with new ideas. You know, I think right now it's kind of a wait and see, though, overall, what does the hobby turn into over the next couple of years. They did say October 2025 is the first NBA, like NBA licensed product. And then April of 2026 will be the first NFL product. Like they're going to have these products coming on. Obviously, they can't put NFL on it or NBA until these licensing agreements come to fruition. But that is the target dates, the first fully licensed basketball and football cards.
I love this. All this great information sharing with all of you. Before we got to talk a little bit about the Topps Chrome basketball of it all. What when the photos, the news, all of that got shared, what thoughts started racing through your head? What was the conversation like with other owners? Like, what's the sentiment right now that it from the room outside of like what the reaction has been on Instagram?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of us in the room were super excited about the Topps Chrome basketball. Again, verdict's still a bit out to be seen. You know, I thought the Wimby card was done very tastefully. I thought the execution of the card looked good. You know, I'm not a huge fan when you see the front image of someone and there's no logo on it and da da da. I'm not a huge fan of that. I would definitely, but there is a tasteful way to do that. And I thought the Wimby card came across great. I mean, I'd love to have one of those on card signed Wimby cards, Topps Chrome. I think it's going to be a monster product. I mean, it's going to have Wimby, Brandon Miller, Jaime Jaquez, and Scoot Henderson. I think it's going to be all their first like rookie autos on card, you know, outside of like a Leaf product or something like that, you know, when Leaf uses mainly stickers. And then when you incorporate that LeBron James is going to have autographs in there, you know, again, if they can do it tastefully in a Lakers uniform, he has nothing that even remotely depicts him in a Lakers uniform that's ever shown an autograph on it. Curry signed for it. KD signed for it. They got some vets in there. So I think the product's going to be huge. I mean, I would recommend to anybody, like, you're always going to have your haters and stuff, but I think one of the best buys on the planet would be buying a case of that and putting it up in your closet and revisiting that in a few years, you know? So I personally, I don't know, how did you feel about the product? What was your indication on it?
I can't remember what my first maybe it was Ryan Card Collectors 2's Instagram Live. Just like was done with a meeting. I popped in and he shared the information first, or that was my first access to it.
Yeah.
And my first thought was about, like, I understood the move, especially capitalizing off of somebody like Wimby and the autograph element of it. But like, I think my initial thought was, man, unlicensed, like, is this going to look funny? Like, and then I saw the pictures and I was like, you use the word tasteful. Like, I think the presentation for what I've seen, and it's not to like, I don't know. I don't think they're trying to deceive anyone by like, but the way they're crafting the photos and stuff, it makes it like, if you fast forward to like 20 years from now, like, are people even going to realize that this is an unlicensed product? And maybe that's what they're going for. And I think, you know, jury's still out and I'd like to see more stuff, but I think from what I've seen from a visual perspective, it looks pretty good.
Yeah. I think, you know, and again, I've seen one photo, like let's say all the cards aren't as tasteful as the Wimby card is. And I'm sure not every card will be, but let's say, I think as long as they get the major guys and they pull those off well, you know, hopefully they understand like, okay, our design on Wimby, Brandon Miller, these big rookies, it needs to be on point. LeBron's got to be on point. Steph's got, like, these big guys have to be on point. I think the product will be successful.
When does it come out? Did they say that?
They think they're targeting July.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's not that far away. You know, I think one thing that also may work favorably, you know, kind of talking along the lines that you did, is that they do have the license coming up. So there will, this will evolve into NBA cards. And so I think like the fact that they're eventually going to have that license, and this is the first Topps Wimby. If someone flashed that Wimby card to you and you didn't know it was non-licensed, you wouldn't necessarily be able to tell that that's a non-licensed card off the bat, right? Like you may look over and say, hey, why doesn't it say Spurs on it? And why is there not like a, you know, but on first glance, you can't really tell it's not a licensed card if you didn't know any better off the rip, you know? I mean, if Wimby is the guy he appears to be, I mean, I think it's going to be a pretty big card moving down the line. So
I find it so fascinating that the state of the industry right now and this like transition from one manufacturer to another is happening right at the time where you've got like on the football side, you got Stroud and then hopefully as I'm a Colts fan, Richardson, and you've got freaking Wimby and Caitlin Clark coming. It's just such an interesting time with all of these young generational type athletes. I think it'll be like a story to tell it, you know, 10 years from now about like where the industry was in this transition while these rookies and their cards were coming out, which is, I don't know. To me, as I view this from, you know, a 100,000 foot view, it just feels like it could be a chapter in the story of the hobby, which will be interesting to everyone who was participating at the time and those who have come in after the fact who are trying to learn why these cards are different from the other ones. I think it'll be fun.
I think an interesting one will too, maybe even more than Topps Chrome is they did also reveal in probably fall, they're releasing a high-end product called Topps Royalty Collection, which sounds is like their version of National Treasures or Exquisite or whatever. And Wimby will have RPAs to 99 in those. So it's going to be, I'm curious to see how the presentation on those comes out. On-card autos, I don't think anything prevents them from using a logo man in the relic swatch. So like, I'm sure they got an NBA game used jersey. Like, what is something like that going to look like? You know what I mean? So
that's the fun part is where you start thinking about the game used materials. I think that's been kind of the question has been like, well, what does that look like in the Fanatics world? My thoughts would be that it would be more prevalent, but there's the balance, right? As the collector, like, would you take the product being unlicensed, but getting a game used Wimby patch with an autograph?
Right.
And it's just kind of the push or pull that we have to think about as participants.
It looked like, you know, and they didn't like pinpoint anything, but it did kind of sound like they're going to try. So one of their big keys, and I'm sure we're running up against it for you, but one of the big keys is they want cards to tell stories. So a storytelling, like what story are we trying to tell? So like one thing they mentioned for like one of the Topps baseball products this year is Jason Dominguez for the Yankees. He hit his first home run at first at bat. They got all four bases from that game, and they're making quad relics with all the bases. Like there's four relics and there's a piece of each one of the bases to try to tell that story. So I think they're going to get, if you remember like old playoff genre stuff where they got very game specific, this jersey came from X. I think, no, you're not going to get it at all. I'm not saying like in a basic Topps flagship, they're going to worry about writing out every, but I think in some of these higher end products, we're going to get more, this came from this, you know, which I think is a huge win rather than we guarantee this is from some game, can't guarantee what player, can't guarantee what game. I think we're going to get more specific. I mean, they started listing off like the debut patches they did last year for baseball. Do you remember those?
Yep.
So, I mean, the list they're going to have this year, they're going to have Ellie De La Cruz. They're going to have Jackson Churi. They're going to have some monster names. And they just, you know, now every player gets that. So as long as they get within that cutoff period, they said they got over 200 MLB debut patches that are going to be in Topps Chrome update this year. So just like, I mean, imagine like Ellie is looking like he's going to be a really good player. Like knowing that patch is from his first game ever, you know, I think that's just really cool to be able to have those, and hopefully we see more of that moving forward. I think that type of stuff, I think, moves the hobby forward where you have some real kind of legacy there for some of these guys that we can pinpoint this came from that.
I love it. And how about that job? You're the individual who has to go track down the bases and get those bases over put those into cards. You can follow their store at Port City Sports Collectibles, Jameson. Anything else you want to plug on your way out?
No, man, just appreciate the opportunity. Again, look for Port City Sports Collectibles on all your social platforms. Probably have maybe on our next show, we'll have some more announcement of some stuff we're rolling out, trying to finalize a few things here and there. But we're excited. Thanks for listening, guys. If we could ever help you with anything, do not hesitate to reach out to us.
Awesome, man. Always fun. Can't wait to do it again.
All right, Brett. Thanks, man.
My mind was spinning. I told Jameson once we hit stop that episode could probably have been 3 hours. Want to dig in more to those topics? I think it's so fun to learn from the hobby shop owner. It is the central point as this hobby continues to expand. Go follow Port City Sports Collectibles across all the channels. Take care of yourself. Take care of others around you. More Stacking Slabs on the other side.